Will you please pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be ever acceptable in your sight, O God. You are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, now there's an unusual story about Jesus with his whip of cords. It's actually a story about how the worship of God is a death and life matter, which is a word that these days we need to take into our hearts. So let's not get too distracted by angry Jesus moving through the temple. But in order to understand the death and life message, we do need to stay there for just a little bit and come to understand what this business about the marketplace is all about. See, in Jesus' day, there was just one place it was believed to meet God, the temple in Jerusalem. And it was believed there was only one good way to receive God's forgiveness, through the sacrifice of an animal at the altar in that temple. A sheep or a cow, if you had the money. Turtle doves, if you didn't. But since the temple was the one house of worship for an entire land, the system had to go like this. If a carpenter like Jesus came from Nazareth to Jerusalem, it was really hard to bring birds or sheep or a cow with you. And so it was much more convenient to buy a cow right there in the courtyard. You could also exchange your money there for paying the temple tax. It was efficient and it was effective. This sacrificial system by which the people thought they were connecting to God and receiving forgiveness. But as prophets like Micah and Isaiah had warned for hundreds of years, the whole system could be a little distracting. That is, distracting from the weightier matters of a relationship with God, matters of justice and mercy. Maybe you might say the system allowed for a compromised consciousness, to go about worship as if it was something that we could get our hands on, like a coin or a sheep or a pigeon, and therefore something that could be commodified, bought and sold with a price. So he makes a whip of cords and turns over the tables and goads the sheep and the bird handlers out. The official name of the story is called the cleansing of the temple. But I don't think it's just the building that Jesus wanted to purify. Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I'll raise it up, he tells the temple leaders. In case we miss the riddle, John explains that he means his body, house of his father, temple, body. He's the temple. He will die. He will rise. And those who want to go to his father will ever after have to look at his cross and his empty tomb. Stop making my father's house a marketplace. For my father's house will be my body, crucified and raised. In our churches, we do not have a system of sacrifice, and hence our buildings are unlikely to be used for the sale of offerings. But do we not have our own systems of distraction? Ways of compromising our consciousness? Ways of commodifying the very relationship that's meant to give us life? When my husband arrived from the Netherlands 20 years ago, he was horrified to discover that Americans church shop, and that he would have to do this too if he wanted to join a church in his new country. Where he is from, every village or neighborhood, quite literally every parish, has its own congregation, and your address determines what church you belong to. So he was completely unused to the American way of having to make choices between Methodists and Lutherans and Baptists, between musical styles and children's programs, between coffee bars and coffee urns. Americans, he noted, choose their churches the way that Dutch people chose their grocery stores, which, let me tell you, is a very serious cultural business. And so churches market themselves. This is so much a part of my culture that when Edwin brought this up to me, I was like, yeah, so? I shopped all the Lutheran churches in New Haven in the city we lived at the time and chose the one that was closest to the divinity school where I was going and which, in my mind, had the nicest music. But what about baptism? He countered, isn't belonging to a church about baptism? And when I started paying attention, I had to admit, no church ever marketed themselves based on the hardest realities of Christian life, which are also its most beautiful possibilities. The call to die to self and rise to a new life. Consider the church that would actually put on its webpage, "We're a community of a lot of different people who are united only by baptism into Christ. We disagree on everything from the altar flowers to which hymn is best to what politics we have. So joining this church will be a great opportunity for you to practice forgiveness and faithfulness and generosity of spirit. Joining this church will be an opportunity to practice death and resurrection and be ready for your hardest days." House, temple, body, destroy the temple and in 3 days he'll rebuild it. Cross and empty tomb, Good Friday and Easter, death and resurrection. It's foolishness if you try to sell it. For us, we're being saved. It is the power of God. With a whip of cords in his hand, Jesus predicted what would happen to him. The good shepherd who drove the sheep out of the temple would lead his people, his real sheep, to gather around his cross, where forgiveness cannot be bought or sold or marketed. From that cross, he cared for his mother, asked for water, and finished his salvation. There, he promised, he would draw all people to himself, none of whom would pay for the privilege. In his stunning book, Stations of the Heart, Parting with a Son, seminary professor Richard Lisher recounts his adult son's death from metastasized melanoma. Along the way, the young man becomes a regular communicant at the Roman Catholic Church and stops there regularly to make the Stations of the Cross, hence the name of the book, Stations of the Heart. But watching his son die in regular communion with the church leads him to reflect on a moment in his own ministry. "Long ago," Richard writes, "when I was a pastor, a young woman came into my study and asked somewhat aggressively, 'What does this church have to offer me?' I should have paid closer attention to her eyes, but like a fool, I reeled off the most attractive features of our program and our facilities. She said, 'Well, that's nice, but I'm looking for someone to help me die. Do you think your church is up to that? And what about you?' she said, calling me out. 'Do you think that's something you can do?' House, temple, body. Cross and empty tomb, Good Friday and Easter. Jesus is the temple and the house of his Father. In holy baptism, we are made part of his body so that death and resurrection are also what our lives are about. Tear us down and in 3 days we rise. That is what the faith is. That is what the church is. The Spirit of the risen Christ, drawing people around his cross so that they can receive the life that pours forth from his broken and yet living body. Resurrection is the reason for a church, and the risen Lord is its power of being. This is the promise. And when I started this sermon, I said that there was a promise here for this present time, by which I mean this corona time, this exactly almost 1 year since for us this pandemic became a daily reality we had to live with. I don't know if it's the fact of the 1 year anniversary, but it has seemed to me and to a number of my colleagues that these are just really hard days. The newspapers have been calling it hitting the pandemic wall. And I don't know about you, but I feel like I've hit so many walls, I've run out of walls to bump into. But I think maybe the better name for what we're experiencing is just grief. Grief at thousands of different kinds of losses, including the actual deaths of people we know and love. Grief at changes that feel like they are so long-lasting that they're beginning to feel less like temporary mitigation efforts and more like permanent but totally unwanted features of our existence. Can I get an amen? They're still temporary. All grief is exhausting, and this is no different. The temptation, when you're going through a time of trial, a time of death dealing, a time of loss, as we all are, the temptation is to believe that there's something somewhere that can resolve all the loss and make us feel better. Something we can buy or something we could find, something that our congregation could do if only we were smart enough to figure it out. Wouldn't it be great if we could make a whip of cords and drive this virus out of not only this church, but also out of off the earth? Too bad microbes don't respond to such measures. But here, in the face of loss that is absolutely indisputable, here in the face of a thing that seems like it's tearing down our temple, our house, God gives us exactly what we need. A body, a temple, a house in which to go to the Father, cross and empty tomb, Good Friday and Easter, crucifixion and resurrection. In his death, Jesus took all our losses upon himself. Arms stretched out upon the cross, he bears them with us, with lament and compassion, with forgiveness and hope. From the cross, he cared for his grieving mother. From the cross, he will care for you too. There is no way to package this grace. It can't be bought. It can't be sold. It can't be marketed. Because grace means gift. It's given to us for free. It's what this house is here for. Amen.